an Aussie update for Red Energy. Red Energy is green and gold. For real Aussie energy, switch to Red today.
Welcome back to Sports Aid. Quickly around the ground, still nil all just before halftime between the Matildas and the US. The US having a pretty clear goal denied for offside by VAR. And the Opals currently in front in their first game against Belgium. Just before halftime, they lead 30-25. But all eyes, Jared, just before we went on air, was on the great Jess Fox, who came oh so close to a gold medal. She finished with bronze in the K1.
Yes, and looking close hand was her father, Richard Fox, an outstanding canoeist in his own right. Picked up 10 gold medals in world championships throughout his career. But as a father and as a commentator, he has witnessed a very, very disappointing result for Jess, albeit that she won the bronze. And he joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Richard.
Good evening, all. How's it going?
How are you going? More the point.
Oh, look, disappointing on the one hand, but incredible on the other, because it was a real fight to the finish. It was a tough course, tough day. We saw that yesterday with the men's canoe final. Dan Watkins made his way through to that final. The heat, the humidity was really in force yesterday. But today, the showdown in the final, Jess was last to start. Ricarda Funk, we know her form. She's one of the fastest in the world. Mm. She put down a good score. Jess chased it hard and made a mistake early on that, you know, was a penalty, and then she lost a bit of time. She fought back incredibly well and she was in the hunt, but a penalty on the second to last gate. So that's what happens when you're scrambling. But look, I'm incredibly proud of her as a dad, and, you know, as anyone in sport would be when you're in an Olympic final and it's down to the wire. You're the last to start and you're the favourite and the number one. And she still did incredibly well.
No doubt she did. I mean, we are all staggered at just how close that last touch was. But nevertheless, she did touch it, got the penalty. She's finished up with a bronze, which is no mean feat in its own right, as you've articulated. But have you spoken to her directly yourself?
No, not yet, because, you know, you finish, you go through all those processes of, media, mix zone, podium, yep, media again, and all that. I've spoken to Miriam, my wife, the coach, and, yep, look, everyone's hurting from it, but incredibly proud too, because she's had such a great journey, and she inspired, so many of the others out there who were competing too. She took the race to them with a great semi-final run, and in the final she had the speed, she had the edge. But it's a demanding course, and you know, when you're in it trying to chase down a big time, you're on the edge, and the mistakes are costly. And to her credit, she held on and was in it to the end. She's still got an event to go, which is good, and that's the canoe event. So she's in the heats for that tomorrow, and semi-finals and finals on Thursday. So got to kind of pack up the kayak and get out the canoe and get back on it.
Richie, can I ask you a layman's question? You mentioned it being a tough course. I mean, are all the courses, I mean, the man-made courses particularly, they are still different around the world. So they've all got their own unique features, have they?
Yes, absolutely. And there's the water, if you like, the channel, that's one thing. And then there's the course that they set, where the positioning of the gates. And this one, the course design, the way they set the gates, it was a sustained difficulty all the way down and probably building towards the finish. And I think, we saw that through the heats, through the semis. We lost, the world champion went out in the semis. So it's one of those technical sports where it's such a fine line between pushing for time and making a mistake where you're going to get a penalty. And there are 25 gates plus all the features. So, but it's well within her reach and ability. And she showed that through the earlier rounds. And I think, last to start and chasing down a good score, she just slipped up in a couple of places. And that was the difference.
What chance do you give her in the C1s? I think the heats are tomorrow afternoon, Richard.
Yeah, so heats tomorrow should be fine. She'll get back. You've got to get used to kneeling instead of sitting.
Yep.
And then I think, the big thing will be on Thursday, the semi-final through to the final, and it'll be the same thing. Like, as I say, it's a challenging course, and in the canoe. She's got the form to go better than she did today, but you've got to give good respect to the opposition. You know, some of the women, or most of the women in the C1 event, haven't raced a kayak. So are they fresh, or are they, you know, they don't have the experience of the course? So, but yeah, she can go all the way. She knows that, and she's expected to be in the running to do that. But look, anything can happen, and it's just great to be out there and having a crack.
Richard, can I just ask you finally, Jared and I both had our hearts in mouths watching here in the studio before we went on air. I'm assuming we were like most of the country. What's it like for her father watching, given you're expected to commentate at the same time?
Yeah, look, I feel better when I'm in it. So if I'm, you know, talking through a run or involved in the performance, if you like, when I was coaching, it's different. As she was lining up, how's she feeling? And then as the run unfolds, of course, it's stressful. But I'm watching what's happening and thinking, how's she going to get out of that? Can she pull it back? And I thought she was still on with it. And the last upstream, that red gate that she clipped, that was the difference. But look, I've been there. I've been the last boat down in Barcelona, and I came fourth. So
yep.
I was a favourite there. That was at the end. But she's still got plenty of racing in her. Of course, it's stressful watching, but you know, we love it too. That's the tension of sport. You can be the best in the world, but it doesn't mean you're the best on the day every time.
No, it doesn't, but we're all still oh so proud of her to win bronze, as I'm sure you are as well, and we wish her the best in the C1. Thanks for coming on. We might touch base with you later in the week, and great stuff on Channel 7.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks very much, guys. All the best.
Richard Fox there, the father of Jess. Lee Matthews is here for McDonald's, and we'll be right back with him after this. You're listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. If you're just joining us, welcome. Sam McClure, Jared Healy with you for the hour, which will include Jared, the man that, well, I was going to say, the man that put together the deal for Craig Bellamy, although apparently he didn't in Frank Panisi.
Might have been a Matty Tripp scenario, maybe Justin Rodsky.
Mm-hmm. Craig Bellamy, if you've been living under a rock, re-signing for another 5 years.
Gee.
Not sure he's going to be coach for those full five years.
He won't be.
But definitely coach for next year, the statement said.
Yep.
So just an intriguing scenario there. But
I reckon it'll be a 3-2 breakdown, maybe a 2-3. 2 years coaching, 3 years.
Okay, I like it.
Probably in the man management of the new coach.
And Harry Schoenberg, the round 19 rising star, the Crow, who I think they're still in Melbourne.
Yep.
Before this week's game. He was really good against the Hawks, Jared. He's been playing as a tagger.
Yeah, he's good against Darcy Parish 3 weeks ago, I reckon it was.
And they're playing the Dogs this weekend. So plenty of options if you want to ask who to tag. Go.
Caleb Daniels.
So he's going to play as a defensive forward.
No, Daniels is sweeping all over the place. So
yeah,
just
but
go
he mainly plays back half, doesn't he?
No, he's going all over the ground now.
Okay. Caleb Daniel, Jared says. But we want to talk about what's happening at the Olympics and mainly what has been happening in the pool. Barry Swaluga, who is a Washington Post columnist, he's actually in Tokyo, one of the great writers around the world, Jared. He's been good enough to give us a moment of his time and talk about the reaction from a US perspective of Titmus versus Ledecky. Barry, welcome.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Well, thanks for having us on your program. Well, thanks for you coming on to our program, Barry. It's outstanding to get these international journalists coming through, of which you're one of the top guys in your field. Can you just describe to us the whole build-up and then the post-mortem of what many people, certainly in this country, are talking about, one of the great races of the modern era?
That 400 free is one you're going to remember for a long time. And I think if from an American perspective, you know, we have not seen Katie Ledecky swim in an Olympic final and not win gold.
Yep.
She did it first in London in the 800 when she was the teen, you know, just 15. Then obviously the big haul in Rio where she won the 2, 4, 8 and 8. And so, you know, when you kind of sleep, if you sleep between Olympic cycles, you don't know necessarily in the States that somebody like Titmus is coming up. She's only 20. So 4 years ago, she wouldn't have been a factor. But as you guys know, I think if you're analyzing this kind of just from an unbiased perspective headed into the Olympics, Titmus had to be considered the favorite in the 400 and had to be considered the favorite in the 200, which is still to come. Just looking over the course of what happened at World Championships in 2019 and some of the times that were posted coming into the games. Now, that doesn't mean to watch it play out. It isn't stunning to see somebody run down Katie Ledecky, the best freestyler probably in history. And that's exactly what Titmus did. I thought the whole thing was remarkable. Both performances were remarkable. It was the second fastest 400 of all time, beating the third fastest 400 of all time. It's kind of why you come to the Olympics.
So I might be aging you here, Barry, but tell me this. What was the biggest shock? Losing the America's Cup in 1983 with Dennis Conner at the helm?
Dennis Conner.
Or was it Katie Ledecky going down?
I mean, weren't we undefeated in the American? I'm out of my field right here, man. I think we were undefeated in sailing forever and ever in 1983, yeah. Right? I'm going to go with Conner as the bigger upset.
I think you're probably right there, to be honest, because you had control of the rules.
That's the last thing I'm going to say about that.
You had the rules in your own control back then. You could design everything. You could change anything to neutralize others. But this is what the great thing about the pool is. Once you enter the pool, everybody is equal in the eyes of God and, of course, the pool gods.
So, Barry, can you talk us through this NBC, I'm not sure if it's a documentary or a series, about the build-up of Ledecky and the Titmus rivalry?
Well, I mean, it's so funny because when we're over here, we're literally not allowed to. I mean, I can't stream NBC on my computer. So I'm right. So detached from the way that the entire country consumes the games. But, I mean, I don't know what it's like in Australia, but if you watch the Olympics in the States, it's packaged. It's really a drama in which the competition are kind of, sprinkled through these human stories. So I'm not exactly sure how the Titmus-Ledecky rivalry is packaged in there because I can't see it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they hyped it up a lot. And for good reason, really. She's such a great star, and swimming since Phelps arrived on the scene, first in Sydney, but really in Athens in 2004, it's been the thing that NBC has wanted in prime time. There's a reason why they're swimming the finals in the morning over here, because that's prime time back in the States. And so to have Katie have, in Rio, she just basically swam away from everybody. It's clear that Titmus isn't going to allow her to do that here, certainly not in the two, and maybe not even in the eight.
Can you talk to us about Lydia Jacoby, this 17-year-old who won the 100-meter breaststroke today?
Just crazy. I mean, as she said today, had the Olympics not been postponed, she would have been 16, would have been swimming at trials, but not a real shot to make the team. And in fact, her family had purchased tickets to fly to Tokyo and taken the game as spectators. So a year later, she gets better. She pushes Lily King, the world record holder and gold medalist at trials. She gets a spot on the team. And then, she's from this tiny town in Alaska, a coastal town in Alaska. She's never been in an international meet. And you don't really know, who will show up in those circumstances. She showed up today. She ran down King from behind over the last 25 meters and just a stunning result. The U.S. goes gold, bronze in that event, but not the order that you might have suspected that they would have gone gold, bronze.
Just having a look at an article on the back page of the Washington Post.
In fact, I think that might be the front page, Jared.
The front page.
Barry just writing one of his many front pages.
The headline is The Aussie Rules. So I take it you understand there's a game of footy down here called Aussie Rules. You ever seen one?
I haven't, no. I would like to, though.
You ever been to Australia, Barry?
I haven't, though. I would like to.
Don't come now, Barry. Just wait just a little bit of time. Yeah. You might end up in a hotel for 14 days.
Yeah, don't do that.
Exactly.
Would you have ambitions to be still writing in 2032? Because that would be a pretty reasonable excuse to come down to Australia.
I can guarantee you, if I need to keep putting food on the table in my family, I'll be down there in 2032. So I look forward to it very much.
Who's got the most pressure on them as far as an Olympian is concerned for the States?
I think Simone Biles, the gymnast, you know, she's done everything she can in the sport. And in fact, you know, this is kind of unheard of that you go through a second four-year cycle. And in this case, a five-year cycle in that sport. Mm. It's just such a, you put such a beating on your body. And it's such taxing training mentally that people don't normally do it. But she's got the title of, you know, greatest ever in that sport. And she's come back for only one reason, and that's to win tonight in the team final and lead her team to another gold, but also to win the all around on Thursday. So she was a little wobbly in the qualifications. I don't know I'm not an expert in that sport at all, but I would say, you know, she's such a household name back home. I would say Biles. And then, you know, Katie in the 800 and the 1500, I think there's a way for her to have a very successful Olympics, even if Titmus beats her in the 200. Yep. But those longer races are her domain, and the introduction of the women's mile, I'm sure she wants to put her stamp on that event since she's been so dominant for so long.
And your reaction to the average start, wobbly start by the Dream Team? We've had our own problems with our professional basketballers who became beige, and Ben Simmons have both elected not to go. We're still trying to win a medal in the men's. Obviously, the girls have won a medal, but looking for higher honours, and we lose one of the best players in the world. But the Dream Team don't lose at the Olympics very often, and yet they've had a shocking start. What's the public reaction? Do they really care about basketball in the Olympics, or is it considered a rite of passage that they just put it down as a gold medal?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, I would say people care if they lose, but don't care if they win, because that's how it's supposed to be. The 04 Olympics, where the U.S. only won bronze and really had just a disastrous team that didn't really fit together, kind of caused them to overhaul how they selected the team. They put in a different coach who had his cycle through, Mike Krzyzewski, and he's done. So now they have Greg Popovich, the great Spurs coach, and there's some question as to, you know, is he really invested in this? He doesn't seem to be holding his guys accountable in a way that he would if it was his own NBA team. And then you've got three additions to the team that just finished playing in the NBA finals, and things are all, you know, the schedule obviously has been all messed up, pushed back closer to the Olympics. So I think there's a real, you know, concern about their level of commitment and interest. There's a real level of concern about their fatigue. And then Kevin Durant should be the best player on the team and in the tournament. And he doesn't seem to be kind of leading them in a way. So we'll see. It's certainly a wobbly start. Not a disaster yet, but it could become one.
Speaking of Barry Sweluga, who wrote the front page, Aussie Rules was the headline on the Washington Post. Now, the next episode, Jared, in the Americans versus the Australians,
yes,
comes in the men's 100 free. Mm-hmm. We've got Kyle Chalmers up against what the Americans are calling, or who the Americans are calling, the next Michael Phelps. I hope I'm not misspeaking there, Barry, in Caleb Dressel. Gian Rooney, who was a name that I'm sure you would know, already has declared on this show that Chalmers will win. What say you?
That'll be a great race. I mean, if I'll be jingoistic and say that Dressel will win, but I'd also pause on calling anybody the next Michael Phelps. I mean, you're talking about a program that was deeper and longer than anything that Caleb Dressel will do. And that's nothing against Dressel. It's just saying that Phelps in 08, doing both IMs and the backs and the freestyles and eight gold medals and all the relays. I mean, that's unheard of. Dressel is an exceptional swimmer. He swam the first leg of the gold medal winning 4x1 relay team the other day. He looks prepared. The mantle has been handed to him, even if it's not a full Phelps. He's expected to be that next guy for the U.S. So that'll be a really, really interesting tussle with Chalmers in the one.
Can I ask you a general question, Barry, and that's your view of Australia. Our view of America initially was you handled COVID poorly. And I think America's view of America was you handled COVID poorly. And you look to Australia and we handled it well, closed our borders, had very few problems bar in one outpost called Melbourne. What's your view now? Because we're in lockdown. Most of our, 50% of our country is in lockdown. We've got about 7% of the country vaccinated, and that's it. Is there a negative sentiment being discussed behind closed doors and out the corner of mouths up in Tokyo about how backward we are?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the way people are thinking of it is both about their home country and how either messed up or successful they are. And, you know, look at the British people are here and they've hosted all these sporting events, and you can say whether that was smart or not. Obviously, people here are concerned about the situation on the ground in Tokyo. Mm. There's a, you know, quote, state of emergency here. That seems to be a little bit of an overstatement. People are still out on the streets. Everybody's masked up, but it's not anything approaching lockdown at all. I agree with you. I think, you know, most Americans would say we didn't handle it well initially, and there's a chance, you know, in the coming months, we're about to say we're not handling it well currently. Mm. I definitely had some Australia envy early on when your lockdowns had turned to opening up earlier. That seemed like a lot of fun when we weren't having much. Yep. But I don't think it's a huge point of discussion here for sure.
Barry, it's been a privilege to have you on. We hope to speak to you later in the tournament, if that's okay.
That'd be great. I appreciate it, guys.
Barry Swaluga there, Washington Post columnist. And that's always great to touch base with someone from the States, Jared, particularly when there's so many good rivals going on.
Oh, his ilk.
Oh, well, absolutely of his ilk. You don't have many journos of his ilk on.
I thought he was very kind in diffusing the issue of COVID, basically putting us in a place and no one's talking about you down there. So move on.
We're going to touch base with the godfather of the Melbourne Storm next. Fair bit going on with Craig Bellamy re-signing. Let's see what Frank Panisi has to say.